Welcome back. Well, next we go to the Garda review of its own investigations into the murders of Tina Satchwell and Michael Gane. Miss Satchwell's remains were discovered in 2023, 6 years after she disappeared, while Michael Gane's remains were found 2 months after he went missing. Garda Commissioner Drew Harris said this week a report from the reviews would be compiled for the Minister for Justice, Jim O'Callaghan. The Minister joins us here in studio. Good afternoon, Minister.
Hi, Ken.
So we saw in the news during the week about the reviews emerging. You were in Templemore with the Garda Commissioner. Did you ask him to do this?
Well, actually, before I was in Templemore, the day before, I had my quarterly meeting with the Commissioner where I brought up the issue of the murder of Tina Dingiven. Like, I think at the outset, it has to be said that the Gardaí deserve to be commended for getting justice in this case. The person responsible for her murder, Richard Satchwell, is now serving a life sentence. So I commend them in the first instance. However, I did raise with the Commissioner concern about the fact that it had taken a considerable period of time to find her body, and he said he's going to prepare a report on that.
Well, it took 6 years, and Gardaí failed to do an intrusive search in her home in 2017 when it was clear construction work had just been carried out there. Does that raise concerns?
Well, listen, there are very devious people out there. There are very devious murderers who go to very great lengths to hide their crimes. That was the case with Richard Satchwell, and it's also the case with the person responsible for the murder of Mike Gane, who hasn't yet been apprehended. So listen, I would have preferred, had we been able to, I suppose, discover the body of Tina Dingiven sooner. That wasn't done, and I'm going to get a report on that, but justice has been done in her case.
And Drew Harris was asked about whether a cadaver dog should have been brought into the home in 2017. Should that have happened then?
Probably it should have happened, because I spoke to the Commissioner as well about the effectiveness of the cadaver dog. They're very specialised dog in terms of trying to train them. There's one on the island of Ireland, the PSNI have one. That dog is sought by many police forces in Britain as well. We got the use of the dog here, and he was of much assistance in terms of identifying
where the body was. And Gardaí have told this programme that, obviously, from what you're saying as well, they have no cadaver dogs. Is that hampering investigations here?
Well, I don't believe it is hampering them, but it obviously would be preferable if we had a cadaver dog. They have a very limited work life cadaver dogs. They're quite an interesting specimen. They're only operational for a period of about 3 years. They have to go through a very difficult training process, as I'm sure you could imagine. But isn't it would be preferable if the cadaver dog that was available on the island had been used earlier?
Well, there has been funding for the expansion of the Garda dog unit. So will getting a cadaver dog now be part of that?
Well, I'm going to leave that to the Garda Commissioner. It's not for me to start directing what type of dogs the Gardaí should have, but certainly the cadaver dog that was got from the PSNI in this instance was very effective, and obviously there's a great benefit in having a cadaver dog, but we have to look to see as to the instance of need for the use of such an animal.
And in the case of Michael Gane, it's highly unusual. An investigation that is still ongoing is being investigated. What are you hoping to learn from that review?
Well, I'm hoping that the person responsible for the murder of Mike Gane will be brought to justice, and I know that the Gardaí are conducting their inquiries very thoroughly. We should also point out, as was the case in the murder of Tina Dingiven, that the Gardaí have a good record in this country in apprehending murderers and bringing them to justice, and I believe there will ultimately be a successful outcome in respect to finding the murderer responsible for the killing of Mike Gane.
Minister, we saw 35 people deported to Nigeria this week, but the most recent figures show 37 Nigerians claimed asylum here on the week ending May 18th. There are 7,260 Nigerians currently claiming asylum here. What do those figures tell us?
Well, there's obviously a lot of people who are claiming asylum in Ireland at present. You've mentioned people from Nigeria. Like, there were two previous deportation flights that went in the end of February and at the beginning of May. They went to Georgia. There's obviously a lot of people in Ireland who've been served deportation orders who've come from Georgia as well. What we're trying to do and what I'm trying to ensure is that although we have a very fair system in Ireland, when it comes to immigration, unless you have a system of deportations as well, well, the system will not operate. Every country in the world that has immigration coming into the country has a system for deportations as well for people who aren't entitled to remain. If you don't have that, there's no point in having a system. Sure, everyone who comes in can stay.
If you returned 35 people to Nigeria this week, it must be perceived that it's safe to do that. Would you put Nigeria on the safe list?
Well, there's a difference here between putting a country on the safe list for the purpose of international protection under the Act and determining whether or not to send somebody back to a country from whence they came. Each person who was on the aeroplane that went back to Nigeria had their individual narratives of persecution assessed by the International Protection Office and on appeal. And subsequently, they got a deportation order that wasn't responded to. They were requested to leave voluntarily, and that didn't happen.
You're trying to speed up the process. Safe list countries have faster timeframes.
That is correct. But at present, for Nigerian applications, there are faster timeframes for Nigeria at present anyway because of the heightened number of people from Nigeria claiming asylum in Ireland. So like the safe listing of a country pursuant to the International Protection Act, all that does, it doesn't preclude a person from a safe country from applying for international protection, but it does allow us to speed up the process in respect of those people. But it doesn't mean if you're not on the safe list of countries for international protection, it doesn't mean we can't send you back to the country where you came from.
Then looking at what happened this week, of the 35 people deported, three children were from the Dublin West Bypass Centre. It was reported in the Irish Times yesterday that when they were being moved, everyone was crying. They were prevented from saying goodbye. Residents there say it wasn't just the children that were traumatised, but it was traumatising for the residents at the Bypass Centre as well. Was all of this done in a trauma-informed way?
Well, as I said to you on Thursday, Cian, like, this is not a pleasant part of my job. You know, I don't relish doing it, but it has to be done. If we have an immigration system or an asylum system that doesn't have a consequence for people who are ruled not to be entitled to stay here, well, then the system becomes meaningless. Let's abandon the whole system and just say people who come here can stay. Like, the criticism of the opposition appears to be that we shouldn't have deportations of children. But if that is going to be the rule, and we need to think out the consequences of that policy change, if that's going to be the changed policy and the new rule, that's going to have very significant consequences for the numbers of people who will want to come to Ireland to claim asylum, because they will know if they bring children with them and if they're parents of those children, that no matter what happens, they'll be allowed to stay.
Is what happened compassionate enough? Sinn Féin's Eoin Óibrín says we need an international protection system that is compassionate.
Well, I would like it to be as compassionate as possible. I don't think Eoin Óibrín or Sinn Féin have more compassion or less compassion than me. And, you know, it's difficult to do this in a way that's going to be very palatable. But it has to be done. And, you know, I will try to ensure, like, obviously the children weren't detained, the mothers of the children weren't detained. They were informed a number of days in advance of the departure of the flight when the flight was leaving. They were brought to Dublin Airport and their fathers were on the flight as well. So, like, it's not pleasant business, but it has to be done.
Are children being made victims for a state wanting to look tough? That's what Gary Gannon of the Social Democrats says.
I disagree with that. I listen to what opposition people have to say in respect of it. But really, people need to, in the opposition, come up with a policy proposal. If Gary or the Social Democrats want to change the policy so that there can be no deportations of children or families who have children, let them put that forward and let's have a debate about the consequences of that. I will be opposing that. But, like, we need to recognise that there's a system in place. It's a rules-based system. We're a very fair and welcoming country. We allow lots of people to come here to work. Lots of people come here to claim asylum. We have a very fair system, but there has to be a consequence for those at the end of the day who are refused leave to be here.
Minister, next to prisons, 5,383 people were in custody in prisons all over Ireland last Friday. There were 4,665 beds for those prisoners. 383 prisoners were on mattresses on floors. 606 were on temporary release. The figures underline the overcrowding crisis. You've seen it with your own eyes as well. You visited Cork, you visited Limerick, I think Clover Hill as well. What's your response
and
to this
I visited
crisis?
Shelton Abbey. I visited five prisoners since I've become minister. I had a good chance to talk to the governors, the prison staff, probation service, and indeed the prisoners. And can I just say, there's a lot of good work going on in our prisons in terms of education, treatment, and preparing people for the world outside. We do have a problem with overcrowding. But if you look at the statistics, Cian, back in 2011, like, we had around capacity in our prison system back in 2011 of around 4,400. Today, we have a capacity of around 4,600. It's an increase of about 4%. The population's gone up about 17%. So we need more prison spaces to ensure that we don't have the type of overcrowding you've referred to. I brought a memorandum to government during the week in terms of trying to ensure that we get further prison spaces. Pursuant to that decision, I'm going to be able to accelerate the construction of 960 prison spaces. But in terms of, we're looking at the period from 2024 to 2031, I'm hoping to see about 1,500 prison spaces. And can I say this? Like, prison is not the solution to everything. I'm also working on restorative justice programs. I'm also working on youth diversion programs, getting them operating throughout the country. But just because of our population increase and because of the, I suppose, the restrictions within the prisons, we need more prison spaces as well.
But overcrowding is having an impact. The Chief Inspector of Prisons, Mark Kelly, told this programme in May that the number of prisoners who died in prison increased by 90% last year. What's the solution to that?
Well, there are many people in prison who have very significant addiction challenges, and I want to ensure that those addictions that they are facing are treated properly. Part of the reason as well by why district judges are putting people in prison is because there's certain places where they think they'll only get some treatment for their services. If many people who have chaotic lives, sometimes district judges think at least if they get to prison, they'll have an opportunity to be treated there. Listen, we need to ensure that we have a fair system in prison. We need more prison spaces, but there's a lot of excellent work going on there. And, you know, we do not have a system in this country where prisons are just about locking people up. There's a lot of great education going on there. We've a lot of very good open prisons. I was really impressed by Shelton Abbey. And the new prisons in Limerick are state-of-the-art prisons. I was in Limerick Women's Prison and spoke to the female prisoners there. It is a fantastic facility. Obviously, there's a lot of rehabilitative work going on there as well. I think we should acknowledge the good work being done.
Are you committed to introducing electronic tagging by the end of the year? How would that work?
Well, that has been in our legislation since 2006, and I am committed to introducing it on a sort of a rollout basis by the end of the year. At present, where there's a procurement exercise ongoing. Listen, the reason I want this in part is to deal with the former topic we were discussing, which is to reduce prison overcrowding. You know, people granted bail or people who, you know, would ordinarily
so who
be...
Who would you tag first, ultimately?
Well, there's three types of, I suppose, offenders or suspects who could be tagged. First of all, in persons who are convicted, people who are subject to restriction of movement orders under the Criminal Justice Act 2006 could be tagged. People who are sex offenders under the Sex Offenders 2023 could be monitored. But also when it comes to bail applications, I would hope that people, instead of being remanded in custody, that we'd be able to supervise people on bail by ensuring that they're monitored whilst they're out on bail. Like, this happens in Northern Ireland. It happens in a lot of other countries. It's not, you know, some draconian intrusive measure. It'll assist us, and it's preferable for many people as opposed to being subject to custodial sentence.
It did also happen here. Electronic tagging was tried in this jurisdiction before. It was found to be too expensive. €1 million was spent on the electronic monitoring of 151 prisoners between 2014 and 2021. The Irish Penal Reform Trust said it didn't represent good value for money. So what's different this time? Why would you do it again?
Well, I think technology has advanced. They're not as obtrusive as they were before. I think it's something we need to look at in the context of the overcrowding in prisons. Like, we need to have alternative options to locking people up. And if the options are available that we can monitor somebody through electronic monitoring so as we can know that they're complying with their bail conditions to stay away from certain places or certain people, I think that's more effective than having somebody locked up and incarcerated. situated.
Drew Harris is leaving in September. There is an issue around qualified senior Gardaí applying for the job because of an impact on their pensions. None of the senior deputy commissioners have applied because of what's seen as a tax exposure on their pensions. What are you doing about that?
There's an ongoing competition going on to fulfil the role of next Garda Commissioner. I'm informed that there's a competition underway. It's a very prestigious job. There's people, no doubt, within the force who will apply for it. One of the things I've learned as a minister is that we have very fine people at the senior levels within Garda Síochána, and I've no doubt people from outside will apply as well. The issue you identify is an issue that was referred to by Donald de Butler in a report he prepared last year. It concerns a technical issue called the standard fund threshold. Donald de Butler came up with three recommendations. One was implemented last year. The second one concerns valuations that should be adopted for assessing the value of defined benefit pension entitlements. I've discussed it with the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste, and I hope and expect, and obviously it's a matter for the Minister for Finance, I hope and expect to see further changes adopting what Donald de Butler said in the budget. And I also welcome the fact that Sinn Féin and Matt Carthy have agreed with me that those issues must be addressed.
Before we let you go, Minister, proposals going to Cabinet on RPZ this week. John Mark McCafferty from Threshold said earlier on the programme this will push people into homelessness. What's your response?
Well, first of all I know is that, Cian, is that a memo will be brought to Cabinet this week. I'm obviously not going to comment on it. I haven't seen it, being truthful with you. We'll get to see it probably tomorrow. I would have thought, from my knowledge of Cabinet colleagues and what's in the programme for government, that renters will be central to the decisions that are to be made on this by government. Also, we need certainty on it, because if we do nothing, the rent pressure zone legislation is just going to expire at the end of December this year. So something has to be done. And obviously we've also got to try to stimulate private sector investment, because this is an issue that requires brave decisions by government.
Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan, thanks for coming in to us this Sunday afternoon.